Our thanks to Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford, for presenting the Ira Kaufman podcast. BillCurryFord.com is the place to start celebrating the recovery. 0% APR for 84 months. Get all the details and deferred payments at Bill Curry Ford.
The GOAT demands an exception, and you make an exception. This is not Jay Cutler we're talking about. They better make the damn playoffs.
I'm the demographic for X-Lax.
Your best days are behind you, Kaufman. Look out, world. The sage is back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Welcome in to the Ira Kaufman Podcast, episode 2, as always, of the week, presented by Bill Curry Ford, and it features none other than the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the king of Newport Richie, Mr. Bill Curry Ford, and the Baron of Big Storm Beer, Ira Kaufman. Uncle Ira, how are you, man?
I'm doing well, Steve. I'm not crestfallen today. No crestfallen, no late obituaries looking backwards from 3 days prior. Gentlemen, I give you fair warning. I'm back on the tennis court. Look out. The knees feel good. Had a 5-week hiatus. Let everything heal up. Back on the court. Back on the golf course. Look out, world. The sage is back.
Impressive, Ira. So you playing doubles, singles? What's going on?
I think I got a singles match later in this week, Steve. Now, I don't know if I can last more than one set with the tropical rays of the pitiless rays of the Florida sun raining down on me. I'll try, dear Lord. I'll try. I got my Gatorade, got my hat, got my sunglasses, got my towel, got my chair. Steve, I might wear a glove on my left hand in honor of the COVID-19 pandemic. Might wear a glove so I don't have to pick up the ball. I'm going to be well protected, Lee.
Well, when you said you're going to wear a glove on your left hand, immediately I thought Michael Jackson.
Don't compare me to the king of pop over there, well,
There used to be an old joke. What does Michael Jackson and the Chicago Cubs have in common? They both wear gloves on their left hand for no apparent reason.
Ooh, not bad. Now, the Cubs have been quite competitive in the last few years under the Joe Madden regime. We'll see what happens without Madden now. But I'm feeling chipper, my friend.
All right, well, I'm Steve Isbitz. That was the voice of Lee DeCamper with Joe Bucks fan. And Ira, Lee said old joke, not a new joke. Come on, get with the program. All right. So, Ira, look, a couple of things I wanted to run by before we get to some real important stuff. I thought it was just fascinating on a couple levels, and we need your sage wisdom on this. So I'm listening to SiriusXM NFL Radio, and Lawrence Guy, the Patriots veteran defensive tackle, he just made their team of the decade, he's on there being interviewed. And they ask him about how's it going with these, off-season Zoom meetings with coaches and the learning, and how's it going? And he says basically that he thinks it's better. That he thinks, you know, when you're in the building and you're a younger player and you don't understand something, you kind of shut your mouth and maybe you ask a teammate or coach later instead of bringing it up in front of the group. But when you're online, there is no later and everybody's asking questions and you can even type up a little message for the coach and everybody hears the same question answered in different ways. And he said sometimes you can even see a young player if you're watching the group screen of all the defensive linemen, for example. You can see a young player looking confused on his little video screen. You can ask a question on his behalf to help the guy out. And he doesn't even know it, and then he hears it again. He gets it. So I thought that was fascinating. What do you think of that, Ira?
That's unbelievable. A possible unintended positive consequence of a horrible pandemic. In certain ways, some things are better. And I'll give you another example. Now, I don't think a lot of people are with me on this, but I kind of enjoyed draft night more than I did, now, of course, we used to have that draft party, which was fantastic. We'll have it again in 2021, but say something like the second day of the draft, I enjoyed it much more in the current format than I did last year. So, you know, we don't want to go crazy about, consequences that are positive about such a horrible time in world history. But who am I to argue, guys, that in terms of learning curves for these young players, this might actually play to their benefit?
What did you like about the TV version? You're not alone. A lot of people, they really liked the TV version this year. And I only saw the very first 20 minutes on Thursday night, and I thought it was overkill and over the top and had very little to do with football, and I shut it off. So what was good about it?
The family reactions.
Okay. Okay.
Instead of guys in suits, here everybody is casual. You get some real-time reaction. I forgot the prospect in the first round, but his father came like walking from behind the couch and fell down on purpose, like he fainted. I mean, that's I thought I was watching Frank Costanza for a second.
Vrabel had someone doing a number two in the background.
That's right, and you had Belichick's dog sitting at the table with the laptop open. that's some classic photos. So I enjoyed it more. That's one thing that I thought the NFL did better.
The scenes from Tua's house were hilarious. Like, his family was way too serious. They're all sitting there emotionless, and then they flash back to him and they're still kind of emotionless, and other ones are going crazy. And I like the personal end of it. I just like looking inside everybody's house, the GM's houses. Yeah. I thought it was just kind of neat, just the something different. And there's a lot to that. I think
the Cliff Kingsbury house was classic. That mansion he lived in.
Steve, I wish they would have kept the cameras on Jason Light's spot because, by the end of the night, he must have jumped into that pool. I hope it's a heated pool, but you got to think by the end of the night, he jumped into that pool because he's got his toy boats floating in there. So you got to play with those toy boats at some point.
SS Buccaneer.
So before the interview closes, Bob Papa asked Lawrence Guy, hey, before we let you go, what is it like to get in a meeting, or can you even imagine what a practice is going to be like without Tom Brady on the other side of the field? And you know what Guy says? He starts saying, the team changes every single year and blah, 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 company line. And Charlie Weiss cuts him off and says, that's such a Patriots thing to say. I get it, but come on. And this guy, Lawrence Guy, continues, he will not name Tom Brady, and he just talks about, football's done a certain way, and being on the field is being on the field, doesn't matter who you're next to. Amazing that they wouldn't even, they're not even going to mention Brady up there.
If Belichick had anything to do with that, either explicitly or this guy thought that Belichick was going to be aware of this video later on and the audio, shame on them. Shame on them. 20 years, 6 Super Bowl victories, a couple of other Super Bowl appearances. Shame on you. You don't even mention the guy's name. You don't talk about the impact of a leadership void with him moving on. You don't have to take a pot shot at Stidham. Nobody's asking you to do that. Nobody's expecting you to do it. But, Lee, not to acknowledge the greatness of number 12, who now will impart all that leadership and knowledge to his Buccaneer teammates, that's very short-sighted. I'm very disappointed in that.
Isn't that the Belichick way?
Yep.
It could be, but you make an exception for the GOAT. The GOAT demands an exception, and you make an exception. There's never been anybody like him. He's the greatest winner at his position in sports history, in NFL history. And when you go across the four major sports, he's one of the great winners of all time. He's right there with Bill Russell. I mean, Russell won 11 out of 13 years. He won an NBA title. This is not Jay Cutler we're talking about.
Ira. Better Christine Cavallari, but is that an example? You hear this, but no one will confirm it, of course. But you hear one reason why Brady, he had ample opportunity to re-sign with the Patriots. Instead, he comes down here with the Bucks, and allegedly, if you believe some people, he was just worn out by the constant mindset of the Patriots. And is this just one example, maybe a small example, while Brady just wanted some fresh air, so to speak, wanted to get away from there?
I think it's part of it, but I think the larger issue for Brady was a perceived lack of appreciation. Now, whether that's true or not, certainly I don't think he felt that way from Kraft, but from the guy at the head of the table, Belichick. He could have got frostbite last year. The guy was so cold with his public comments. And, of course, I don't care. I don't care what kind of statement Belichick puts out. Once Brady's an ex-Patriot, he's going to do that to quell, Patriot Nation, because those fans haven't turned on Tom Brady. They know what he did. And I'm not saying he was more important than Belichick. That's a great raging debate in Foxborough. And there's no right answer. Maybe we'll know. Steve in a year or two. We'll gain a little insight into that question. But I've had it posed to me from some New England writers, and the consensus that I got from the New England writers was in favor of Brady in that equation. Brady was more important than Belichick over the last two decades for New England success. I'm not going to argue with that, Steve. I'm just not.
All right, Ira. One tiny quick note on the draft. Just a reminder, it was Jameis back in 2015 who decided he was not going to go to New York and he was going to stay at home and he wanted to be with his family. And it was all the rage, oh, Jameis is ditching the NFL and how dare he do that. And now it's like the thing to do. So just a little nugget there. Ira, your podcast is presented, but it's not just presented. We are great fans of Bill Curry Ford, a true family-owned dealership, 60 years of tradition in Tampa, 1 mile north of Raymond James Stadium. And wow, General Manager Sean Sullivan really will do anything for any listener for Ira Kaufman. It's just that bottom line. He loves Joe Bucks fan. People have heard him on the podcast, and he's going to give you a deal if you mention Ira. He is going to take care of you personally in any way that he can, through email, text, whatever it might be. And that's on top of all the incredible offers and the pricing and the transparent pricing at Bill Curry Ford that goes on year-round, and their nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles, BillCurryFord.com, BillCurryFord.com. We are so excited to get back to the dealership as things get more back to normal to record some podcasts and take some more pictures of you, Ira, because you are a spokesmodel for the dealership. Not a spokesperson, but a spokesmodel. All right, Sage. Now, Big Storm Beer, Florida's best craft beer, hands down. Odessa Tap Room, Clearwater Tap Room, food at both locations, an expanding menu. The new kitchen is in Clearwater. Fantastic place. As the state allows it to open big, it's going to be open big time again with the bar open and all that stuff. And, of course, right now you can dine there, but there's also delivery, takeout. We love Big Storm Beer, the Tropic Pressure, Florida Ale, your favorite, the Bromosa, which is the Tangerine IPA. A little strong, but fantastic. You got to be careful with it.
They're turning me into a beer drinker, Steve. That's what they're doing. Not only is it the quenching, but it's quite delicious. And from a guy who really hasn't been much of a beer drinker, they're turning me, Steve.
You know, 2 years ago, it was all about the Riesling on this podcast. Now I was like, I need more of that Tropic Pressure. Where's my beer? I'm a spokesman. What's going on? So we're so excited about the Big Storm partnership as it evolves now. Hopefully we get football games and games that everybody can watch at Big Storm. Ira's going to be out there all season long. Exciting times. BigStormBrewery.com to find the beer near you. If you live out of the area, good chance you'll have it in Florida and many other states. All right, Sage, Levante David, he gets on the Jim Rome show where he's been there before, maybe three times over the last 5 years. And he's really surprised, Ira. He just, you know, he can't believe all the hype and how the networks have embraced the Bucks. And he's like, you know, we went from Thursday night football once a year to all these games. And he said, quote, we went from being the hunters to being the hunted. And it really seemed like it sort of startled David quite a bit, even after signing Tom Brady. You know, do you think that reflects a lot of the Buccaneer mindset?
There's a realization, even from the three of us, certainly from David and his family and his peers, that he has been victimized by the irrelevance of the Buccaneers. He may be more than almost anybody. McCoy was still making Pro Bowls, six of them in a row, I believe, partly because you know, there was less competition at that particular position, interior defensive lineman, NFC. You know, David was going up against these animals from the linebacker spot, and most of them were edge-rushing, you know, linebackers in a 3-4 with statistics and sacks. And David hadn't been turned loose since the days of Greg Schiano and Sheridan. I think there's an exhilaration on David's part. I think he's kind of thrilled that the Bucks are being talked about. Lee told me the other day that he was watching, I think it was Florio's Pro Football Talk, Lee, and the Bucks were half the show. Half the show in mid-May. I mean, that's never happened. That has absolutely never happened. The only other time it could have happened was the second year of the Schiano era, E-R-R-O-R, which was a season that the three of us will never forget. I've never been through anything like it. The Freeman debacle, the start, what was it, 0-8, and the Mercer. And the Mercer coming into the building when, you know, here it is in mid-November, and Jonathan Banks missed two games with a knee injury, and I see him out on the practice field on a Wednesday, and I said, Mr. Banks, are you going to play this Sunday? He goes, am I going to play this Sunday? You don't think I can overcome a knee injury? I had Mercer, man. I had Mercer. And what a year that was. And that's the year that the Bucks were in the news for all the wrong reasons. All the wrong reasons. And it's been that way. The Winston suspension, the coaching firings. I mean, very little positive stuff coming out of one Buck place. And I think Levante David is absolutely thrilled by it, Lee, and he could benefit from it in terms of his own recognition of what a fine player he is.
Ira, you forgot one other element of that that crazy season that got a lot of play. Remember when Freeman's agent claimed that Schiano leaked his medical records?
Absolutely.
Schiano had a right-hand man, sort of like a football administrator.
His name was Kevin.
He texted me and goes, hey, coach wants to talk to you.
Right.
Whoa, what's going on here? This is right after a press conference. So what, asked the wrong thing? What's going on? I'm like, okay. And he said, meet us out front. And so Steve, you know, I told Steve about it. We went out front. Then it was almost like watching when Robert Kennedy got led through the kitchen the night he was assassinated. They're leading us through the back, through the kitchen of one Buck. Oh, like, uh-oh, am I going to get popped here? Am I going to get whacked? And they bring us to, like, a little room, and Schiano was an open book. He talked about anything. It was all off the record, of course. And he got almost violent. He was so upset at the accusation that he or anyone under his watch leaked any medical records of anyone to anybody. I mean, he was outraged at that. Absolutely outraged.
No question about it. And Steve, wasn't that also the same year that some people suggested that Schiano rigged the vote for captain, Steve?
He got mad about that too.
Yeah, it was just a whole pile of nonsense, just the silly covert stuff that was going on at one buck.
Steve, what was his reaction? Why the F would I care who the hell these guys vote for captain?
Yep.
The fun part of the whole exchange then, Ira, was Schiano just, you know, being somewhat relaxed after he was pissed off, just kicking back and talking about how his father was completely addicted to Joe Buck's fan, and Schiano was trying to figure out why every time he visited the website that Asian dating ads and Russian broads were popping up.
Oh, his son!
Were popping up on his screen, and we explained to him, well, that's what's in your browser. Somebody must be using your computer at home to look at those types of websites, so it recognizes it and populates it. And he was very very confused. I said something to him like, oh, who knows what your wife's doing when you're not home? And he,
you know, guys, along those lines, and I don't think I've told this story, is, you know, when I got my personal invite up to, you know, Castle Schiano, guys, he looks at me, and this is 2013, I believe, and he looks at me and he says, he goes, Ira, I trust you. I trust you. And I said, I feel very privileged by that. He goes, I'm going to tell you why I trust you. You're old, Kaufman. You're old. I couldn't believe he said it. And he goes, you've made your bones. You've already made your bones in this business. You're not like these young punks that will run with anything I tell them, even if I tell them it's off the record. They're trying to climb up the ladder and then in their little departments, in their sports departments. You're not like that. Your best days are behind you, Kaufman. You're old, and that's why I trust you that you're not going to screw me. And I didn't know whether to take it as a compliment or give him a little Brooklyn slap over there, Steve. You would have gave him the slap. It was a hell of an explanation by Schiano.
That's the jersey in him, right? You make your bone.
Yeah, I know. I know you've told me that one before, Ira. I think you told that maybe 3-4 years ago on the podcast, but it's a classic.
With the background of Schiano. Well, at any rate, when he was talking about, I don't know why these Asian ads are popping up. And he immediately, I asked him, I said, what's your son watching? and then he looked at me like, what are you talking about? And then Steve explained how it worked. And Steve said, who knows what your wife's doing in the middle of the night?
Oh, boy. I don't think he was a bad guy. I don't. He was the wrong coach at the wrong time for that team. And he's another guy I think would be better the second time around. I don't think he'll ever get a shot. I hope Raheem Morris, who I also think would be better the second time around, I think he still might be a viable candidate in a year or two from now. He might pop back up onto people's screens. He might.
I was going to say, I don't know what you're talking about. Shiano's a lunatic. Come on.
No. Well,
the guy's a lunatic. Good guy. He's a lunatic.
You talked about Raheem.
Yeah.
I read something this morning where Steve Bartkowski, you know, he's a radio analyst. He's basically the Dave Moore for Atlanta, the former quarterback. He says do or die for the Falcons. He basically said if they don't get to the playoffs this year, they're very likely going to be a massive regime change.
Oh, there's no question about it. I was surprised Quinn kept his job. I guess they rallied for him a little bit, maybe the last 6 weeks. But there's no question about it. He's got to have a winning record to have any chance to stay, I think.
They won 6 of 8 to close the season, and they made some changes. It's really not a bad team, but we're going to find that out, Ira.
Well, they were terrible in the first half of the year, Steve.
Sure.
I mean, they were terrible.
So were the Bucks, but we expect everything from the Bucks.
Yeah,
they got a good quarterback. It's going to be very interesting, Ira, very interesting. All right, Sage, look, Sean Murphy Bunting was talking to the local media. You were playing a little tennis, drinking a little Big Storm beer, but Lee and I were on the conference call, and a couple of nuggets. Sean,
did you ask any questions, Isbits? Did you ask any questions?
I asked a question, and then I put my hand up again, my virtual hand, and they didn't call on me, so that's fine.
You put your hand up, they gave you the finger, Isbits. That's what happened. All right, what was your question, by the way? May I ask?
My question was, where does he think he's going to take the most snaps, and where is he most comfortable playing? And he gave the corporate answer, but he seemed very genuine, saying that he really is very comfortable at either slot, and that the whole room itself is very versatile, and nobody's going to be crying because they're the number three guy, and everybody will have his or chance to be the number one guy, and all that stuff. But he did say that he would be playing anywhere, and you have to sort of guess now, with Winfield only being trained at free safety, Murphy Bunting's going to be the nickel at least early on.
I'm still putting my money on Winfield as my nickel. That opinion might not be worth 2 cents, but it's my nickel opinion. And I just think he's got the skills for it. We'll see about Bunting. As far as playing corner, in my opinion, I know he led the team in interceptions last year, but it's not like he got 7 and the next guy got 3. I believe he had 3. In my opinion, he is number 3 behind Dean and Davis. I don't think there's any question about it. He happened to be in the right place at the right time, a couple of key plays last year. He did. Give him credit. But I think as far as defending passes, being in the neighborhood of these passes, which we didn't see for about a 3-year span until late last season, when I think there was a marked improvement across the board. I think Dean and Davis are clearly ahead of Bunting on the depth chart as far as being an outside corner.
Yeah, I would agree, only because I think they're not really going to be as good at nickel, but I'm not sold on Dean. I think he's an excellent talent, ran the 4.3, and we saw some of that closing speed, but there's so much more to prove from these guys, and now, you know, all the offensive coordinators have more tape and all that. So it'll be interesting to see how they all interchange and all that. Anything stand out for you, Lee, from Murphy Bunting?
I just thought it was mildly interesting. He talked about the potential for playing in front of or in an empty stadium or maybe a partially occupied stadium because of the virus. And, you know, he said, hey, you know, it's football. For me, the audio was really, really lousy. Zoom conference. I couldn't hear his exact sentence, but what I was able to make out was, we've got a great home in Raymond James Stadium. The fans are awesome. And it sounded like he wanted to say something about the Cannons, but I couldn't make it out. But he basically said, hey, it's football. It's not like it's going to be another practice. You know, it's going to be bad. We're not playing before fans. And I think it opens up, and we've touched upon this before, but I don't think we're giving it its due diligence, so to speak. It's, I was listening to NFL radio last night. It's looking bad as far as the salary cap next year. There was the Economist. Now, Alex Marvez said this on NFL radio, our good friend Alex Marvez, and I can't find it on the internet, so I'm going to get a hold of him, say, hey, where'd you find this at? But apparently there's some sports economist at Washington University in St. Louis said if the NFL doesn't have fans in the stadiums, it's going to cost them X billions of dollars this fall. And I can't find that on the web, so maybe he got a press release of some sort about that. But I did find where the same economist said the fallout from the sports industry with this virus, quote-unquote carnage. That's what he referred to it as. Anyway, the reason why they were talking about this on SiriusXM NFL radio last night was, Dak Prescott better get off his rear end and sign with the Cowboys, because that money that the Cowboys, Jerry Jones, put on the table for him may not be there in a month or 2 months or 6 months from now. And the reason why I'm bringing that up is the Bucs have their own guy they need to re-sign that was a Pro Bowler last year, and everybody and their brother would love to get their hands on this guy, maybe more so than Dak Prescott. His name's Chris Godwin. And if that salary cap does go down, Buck's going to have a whole lot of very, very difficult decisions. And what we think is a two-year window may be only a one-year window. And that 1 year would be this fall.
Along those lines, guys, the Bucs, maybe they like their depth at defensive line. I don't.
No.
I don't. And I think they're getting a little old there. You know, Vea is the young, stud. There's no question about it. And I think he's a very good player. Vea's going to get better. But they don't have a lot besides that. I mean, Golston, who didn't play poorly last season, he's not 24. Sue and JPP are over 30, and they lost two defensive linemen. So in terms of the salary cap, I don't think it's going to be that easy to push Sue and JPP aside a year from now. I just don't think they have the depth to do that. They didn't use a premium draft pick on a D lineman. They did not. That's just the way. And they lost two defensive linemen to free agency. So I don't know how much flexibility they're going to have. If some of these young guys, Anthony Nelson, if they don't take a step up, I don't see where the Bucs are going to have a lot of financial flexibility next season.
I'm thinking, Ira, that Anthony Nelson is your next Carl Nassib, I think you're referring to. One of the guys.
Could be.
And the other guy, Bo Allen, who left, I think this guy out of Nebraska they drafted late in the draft, I think potentially he could be the next Bo Allen. He's a big guy, and apparently he can put some pressure on. But, Bo Allen, you didn't expect much from him as far as sacks. So I think that's Vea / Sue's backup right there.
I think you're right, and I think they want to put this rookie into the D-tackle rotation. I'm not saying equally. I mean, the kid's not going to play as much as Vita Vea and Sue. But play him often enough that you can get a good gauge on whether going forward, he can be a building block. I don't expect him to be as good as Vita Vea. Steve, they've kind of boxed themselves in a hole a little bit. I don't see where they have the depth necessary, like the old days where Rondé Barber didn't have to start year one. And, after a year and a half, he was ready and groomed to move in.
I wanted to bring up, as far as the salary cap, Lee, guys, if it's $200 million per team, then that means that in round numbers, it's $400 million of revenue per team because they have that even split. So it's $13 billion. That's the NFL. If you multiply it by 32, it's like $13 billion. So if they lose, if they're down $3 billion, $4 billion, It's not really the end of the world. And I remember talking to Joel Glazer about this at an owner's meeting, and he explained that the TV contracts are written in advance ahead of the end of the labor agreement, so the league has the money locked up and doesn't have to worry about a new labor agreement at the same time having new TV deals. So if they lose all that stands, that revenue from games, I think they'll only be down about 20% or so, and I think they could work that out. I heard something else on Sirius that said that in that scenario, if the salary cap was down $30 million, as an example, $40 million, that the teams might be given the flexibility to just throw that money in themselves to not worry about, or to sort of keep the integrity of the cap as close as they possibly can. They bend the rules a little bit to help the players and let the owners not freak out the fans. It'll be interesting, but as we said before, it's not going to go up.
Did they raise their debt limits by like $50 million a team? Could I be wrong with that?
I don't know.
It was like a boatload of money. Just, you know, the last couple of days, the NFL said, hey, you know, because each team has a debt limit. And I think they're letting either $50 or $100 million per team allowed to raise their debt limit because they foresee revenue being way down.
Even though every sports league is going to be affected by this, I think Lee would agree the NFL is the best situated to deal with it. There's no question
about
it.
Maybe NBA too.
And their TV deals are not going to go down, Lee. As a matter of fact, I think viewership might be at an all-time high this fall.
And another thing that I was actually reading, that they'll have more sources of revenue this year. If it goes to the point where they have no fans, they're just going to add Saturday games because they can get paid for it. And they can do a lot of different things just to generate money that they don't normally do.
Like, for example, with the new contract they signed with Amazon, there's actually going to be a one game that's exclusive only to Amazon Prime. No, if you don't have Amazon Prime, can't watch it.
How about that?
I guess what Steve is insinuating is they could do that this year as well. Let's say, you know, college football is completely up in the air right now. So let's say hypothetically, and I hope it doesn't happen, hope this doesn't take place, but let's say there's no college football. Well, inventory. The NFL has inventory that they could sell for Saturday games, and maybe like Steve is saying, something like they could make a special deal for ESPN, for Amazon, you know, Facebook, whomever.
Yeah, if there's no college football and the NFL sells a 10-game Saturday package to somebody, I mean, they'll be looking at gobs and gobs of money. All right, Ira, look, your podcast is available to everyone at Google Play, Podbean, Apple Podcasts, all these different places. And anybody can subscribe free. They get a nice little alert, or they can listen to JoeBucksFan.com, leave a review. If you're angry, happy, whatever your mood is, you just want to express your sympathies for Sandhill Cranes, that's fine as well. And if you don't know what that's about, you can go listen to the last podcast. And they're all presented by Bill Curry Ford, BillCurryFord.com, C-U-R-R-I-E. That's a family name. It's not just a fun name. And the family works and runs the dealership with General Manager Sean Sullivan, BillCurryFord.com. Fantastic group to work with on all levels.
Steve, speaking of Sean Sullivan, Buck fans that go in there, they should ask for him. He's a busy man, but he'll make time for him. You're not going to find a bigger Buck fan, nor a more informed Buck fan. He's very honest. You know, he's not here to tell you that, you know, Whitehead is going to be an all-pro safety in 2020. But he always roots for the Bucks, big time. And if you show up, it'll be well worth your time.
One, I talked to Sean this morning, and he told me he sold a vehicle to Jimmy Giles this week.
You know what? That's funny. I got a call from Giles this week.
Okay,
he was talking about Sean Sullivan.
I bet Jimmy Giles was lucky to get out of that building, knowing Sean and how much Sean loves the old creamsicle 1980s Bucks. He loves Jimmy Giles. Who doesn't love Jimmy Giles?
And Lee, you know what they talked about? I guarantee, part of the time, O.J. Howard.
And yeah. Last thing, you know, Steve was mentioning the hate mail. I've noticed a pattern. I kind of noticed it a few weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago, but now it's just about 100%. Anytime there's an article on JoeBucksFan.com, someone doesn't write, unless it's Ira, guess who gets blamed? I told someone in the Bucks press box in Los Angeles when they beat the Rams, I told this guy, I said, I'm the second most hated man in Tampa Bay. And this guy says, who's number one? I said, Jason Light.
Hey, something I've been thinking about. Tell me what you think. I can just hear Steve saying, Ira, no comparison. What are you talking about? The apples and oranges. The excitement of this 2020 offseason, the anticipation, and how it compares to the 2003 off-season when they were defending champs. They had all their defensive players intact, two Hall of Famers, All-Star Brad Johnson, Keyshawn McCardle. Steve, is that a valid comparison, or is there more this year?
I got to say there's no comparison to the 2003 year, only because the sad reality of you've got, what, 20% of people have lost their job around Tampa? They're just not, we haven't, but they're just not sitting there obsessing about the Bucs when they're wondering where they're going to live and eat. So I have to say that it's all tempered because of that.
So you'd say no comparison, and you'd say the needle goes in favor of the 03 offseason. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, I even remember my own excitement. I couldn't wait for that season to open up in Philly, Monday Night Football. Let's go. And the Bucs punished them, and it was an ultimate high. I just think it's different this year for a variety of reasons.
Now, Lee, that team didn't have Tom Brady.
That's what I want to ask you about, clarification. Are you talking about the anticipation of a new season, or are you talking about media coverage?
I'm talking about fan anticipation.
2003. Yeah, if you're talking about media coverage, it's not even close. It's today. But if you're talking about anticipation, yeah, it's a Super Bowl. They just got off the Super Bowl, and everybody looked like they were going to be another dominant team. There was nothing not to – there were no doubts. People had no doubt the Bucs were going to make another Super Bowl run. They just came off the Super Bowl. They got the offensive coach they wanted. They had the defense. Everybody was just pumped to that, to the max. I absolutely agree with Steve.
And of course,
anticipation isn't even close. Now, media coverage today trumps it significantly, maybe minimum five times, because at the time you didn't have FS1 with all their hollering shows. You didn't have ESPN with all the ESPN was there, but you didn't have all their hollering shows. You didn't have NBC Sports Network, which is nothing but hollering shows. There was no pandemic to keep people home, and outside of looking for a job, the only thing they had to do was eat and watch TV. So the media coverage now is way, way better. Or now I wouldn't say better is not the right word, but more. But the anticipation, significantly more in 2003. I agree with you.
Lee, what was Florio yakking about with the Bucks the other day?
It's Brady and it's Gronk. I don't know if people saw this on JoeBucksFan.com. It was a video someone took of Instagram stories of Evans and Lewis Murphy just chatting with each other. It looked like they just finished a video game, and they were chatting with each other. Someone videotaped that, put it out on Twitter. I saw it. I embedded it. And the next day, Monday and Tuesday, that's all people were talking about. Oh, Mike Evans said this about Jameis. Mike Evans said this about Brady. And Florio turned that in like three different segments, just Evans saying four sentences. Florio would turn that into three segments. Very Phil Mushnick of him. And ESPN did the same thing. And I'm watching NFL Network this morning, and they did the same thing. You know, Mike Evans says this about Tom Brady. Do you agree? And just that little bit, Evans, like three or four sentences, and that turned into so much coverage, it's unbelievable. And why? Brady.
Steve, everything that goes on at One Buck Place right now is big-time news, Steve. Everything.
Jim Kelly was talking about Tom Brady. He's interviewed, a 10-minute interview, and, you know, the Bills are a good team, made the playoffs, exciting young quarterback, excitement in the division with Brady gone. Next thing you know, it's all Brady questions. And this isn't even in the Tampa market. So it's just nuts. Ira, I guess the one other thing I think is important to add, while the Bucs have a lot of fans, and the fan base is now growing, The sheer size of the fan base back in 2003, I think just was much bigger than it is now. And that's just part of the whole hype thing. I mean, it was just bigger then. That's just my humble opinion.
The only thing maybe in favor of the 2020 offseason in terms of anticipation is the hunger for a winner after 12 years of irrelevance. We didn't have that in 2003. So I know that's a small factor, but it's something to be said.
Yeah, the hunger is huge, but the point is that there's fewer people hungry because some of them have already jumped off a bridge or become Panthers fans or whatever. You know, two things, and then we'll head the heck out of here. More podcasts, of course, next week. We do not stop. Nothing ends. I was going back.
No handouts.
Yeah, no handouts. No panhandles.
Not asking for money.
Sage, I was watching a long Rob Gronkowski interview from last October, and he talked about, quote, I'll read you the quote, I've literally had 20 concussions in my life, probably 5 blackout concussions where I'm out for at least 10 minutes and don't know what's going on. And he also talked about having 9 surgeries. And he went on further to explain that, and I didn't know this about Gronk, maybe you guys did, but his father has had a whole career in the fitness industry. His father used to sell weights. He was a weights distributor, salesperson, big muscle guy, and you know, taking care of his body was always sort of part of Gronkowski's life. It's nothing new for him. And he just talked about how he was so beaten up, and even though he was taking such good care of himself, that he would just get to the game, take one hit, and he was like back to square one. And that's what led him to retire, that he could never catch up on fixing his body. And here he is. And hearing the 20 concussions and 5 blackout concussions, the Bucks know this. I don't know. What's your thought hearing that?
Well, it is quite startling. I don't know if he's exaggerating a little bit. If he is, he's not exaggerating much. The way he plays the game, the physicality he brings, it doesn't shock me that he suffered multiple concussions, a lot of concussions, double-digit concussions. And from that perspective, guys, from a health, strictly health perspective, it makes absolutely zero sense for Gronkowski to return to football. He doesn't need it financially. His place in Canton, I assure you, is secure. 5 years out, he's going to have a bust. And now that's pushed back. So what does that tell you? Lee, you know what it tells me? His competitive juices rival Tom Brady's. He wants to get out there with his buddy and do it again. He loves the act of competing at the highest level. Because, Lee, on so many other levels, this decision makes no sense.
And, you know, it's also the love of the game. These guys, it's hard for them to give it up. And I think it's as simple as that. They get out of the game and, you know, something in them like, hey, you know, I'm not 40 years old. What did I just do? I need to get back in. And it's that way with politics with some people. It's that way with sports with some athletes or, yeah, you know, whether it's basketball or hockey, you name it. And Michael Jordan, wasn't he out of basketball for a while? I got to get back in it, you know.
It's like Ira with tater tots and French fries. Yeah, for a while, he goes off them for like 4 or 5 months, and then
always come back to the mother load. Always come back to the mother load.
Always comes back to the mother load. I order my fries. Ira's guy, you're not going to eat all those, and there goes his hand. He's right in there. All right, Ira. I'm glad you mentioned Canton because you know, The Athletic, the paper read publication there. They've got their local reporter, Greg Allman. He writes a few stories a week, whatever they do over there. You know, the long-form stuff, introspective things that some people like, some people don't. And his recent piece is on Rondé Barber's disrespect when it comes to making the Final 15 and getting into the Hall of Fame, you know, making the finalist, getting into the room, as you call it. And I was blown away, Ira. I read that story. I don't usually read the long stories. No mention of Ira Kaufman. How do you write a story about Rondé Barber in the Hall of Fame and not call the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the man who's been representing Tampa in the Hall of Fame for like 15 years? I don't know. Did he call you?
You know, I saw that headline on Twitter, Steve, that Greg wrote a column about Rondé Barber. I think it was under the headline of snubs. They're doing a series of snubs, and Allman picked the Rondé Barber one, which is a good one. Rondé Barber has been snubbed by the at-large committee of 46 members. I've talked about Rondé Barber to a lot of these guys, and I hear that nonsense about system corner and system player and try to tell them, you know, that's what you say when you got nothing negative to say about a player. You throw that out there. But Greg Allman did not call me. Now, when I saw the headline, I wanted to read the story, but I'm not a subscriber. So I got into I got 42 words into what's probably a 3,000-word story, and I got an ad for subscriptions, and I canceled and went back to YouTube, but I did not read the article, but I did not get a phone call. You know, it reminds me a little bit, Steve, and I think that was an omission on Greg's part, because I could have gave him some background information about some of the reasons that Ronnie Barber has been snubbed, which is the essence of the article. What's going on with the Hall of Fame committee? Where's the respect for one of the great Bucks of all time? It reminds me a little bit, and this is about 5 years ago, Sports Illustrated, Peter King was still there. He was he had a couple of people under his tutelage. Steve, remember, he was like the football editor, and he had some people, Jenny Vrentis. There was a guy named Robert Klemko. Robert Klemko. And I'll never forget it, because this is like, Sapp was the class of 2013. Brooks was the class of 2014. This was like maybe 2015. And I remember I walked into the room on that Saturday morning, and I forgot what city we were in for that particular Super Bowl. And I remember somebody came up to me, and they were looking at their phone, and they asked me, hey, have you seen this? And they showed it to me, and it was an article. And the guy had called it up on his phone that appeared under the SI.com banner, and it was written by Robert Klemko, and it was all about the Hall of Fame process and how is this really fair that people make speeches for these players, and maybe sometimes a player may not have the greatest orator as a representative, and he's putting people to sleep, and other people have better guys. And anyway, he led this whole article with my presentation of Sapp. Now, he talked to some, I don't know if he talked to Peter King, but he talked to some people that were in the room in 2013 when I made the Sapp presentation. And I'm reading this Klemko article. He never talked to me. He never called me. And he's leading with my Sapp presentation. He was not in the room. There's no tape recording of it. There's no video. And he's quoting me in the Sapp presentation, and he's quoting me wrong. He's getting it a little bit wrong, and he never called. And I immediately, King was sitting 10 feet away from me at the time, and I said, Peter, what's going on with this Klemko article? The guy never called me. I'm the subject of the article. And King looked at it, and he goes, he never called you? And I said, no. And he said, let me handle it. And a few days went by, and King sent me an email, and he apologized. He said it was an absolutely terrible decision on Klemko's part, he misquoting me in the room when I could have straightened him out and told him exactly what I said. And, you know, Steve, it doesn't take too much to make a phone call. And it surprised me because Allman's the king of phone calls. He's very diligent. He tracks down people that you don't think he can get very easily. He's very good at it. You know, for an article like that, and I haven't read it, but I thought, you know, just for background purposes, he would have called.
I read this Klemko guy. Isn't he the guy that got suspended by Peter King for getting into a fist fight with a Chicago cabbie, or am I mistaking him with Dan Rather?
I can't remember, Lee.
Wasn't that a Keep Tlaib? Wasn't that a Keep Tlaib?
That was down here.
And by the way, Klemko also sent me an email a week later apologizing and saying he should have called me. So
could have wrote a follow-up story with you quoted.
He could have. He had some good quotes in there, but they weren't quite accurate. And as you guys know, and as Chuck Todd can tell you now, you better be accurate in this day and age or you're going to get called on it.
Well, it's a great story, Ira. That one I had never heard before, and I guess, I don't know if irony is the right word, but bottom line is, obviously, knowing you as I do, you had a copy of the speech. If Klemko said, hey, could I see a copy of what you read, you would have sent it to him. You would
have
sent it to him. You would have sent it to him, and he could have just said, as provided by Ira Kaufman, and it would have covered it right there. It's a shame, Ira, but I just thought that was strange, and I didn't know if you got a phone call, so I thought I would hit you with that here on the podcast.
This Klemko did get arrested for getting in a fist fight with the Chicago cop, and he also got pinched for protesting in Ferguson.
Oh, boy.
Well, you know what? We'll have some fun with Peter King at the Super Bowl in Tampa. Hopefully it goes off, but we'll have fun with Peter King in town. We have to pull off some sort of shenanigans with Peter King, get him out to Big Storm Beer. He's always doing some sort of some sort of beer-related thing. We'll get him out there.
Steve, if we're allowed to training camp, and that's a big if at this point, and I'm talking about the media, never mind the fans, but if the media is allowed to training camp in some capacity, you know that the Peter Kings and the Priscos and the Judy Batistas and the Rappaports and the Lock and Fours are all going to be taking JetBlue down from New York to Tampa en masse. I mean, where else are you going to go? Go to Cincinnati for the Joe Burrow story, and then you're going to immediately go to Tampa for the Tom Brady story. So brace yourselves, people, and you can talk to Peter King in training camp.
Ira, you were a proud member of UPI at one point, were you not?
I was.
Well, I just did some quick Google search here. I Google searched Dan Rather Cabby fight. The very first thing that comes up on Google is a UPI story. Here's the headline.
Don't tell me I wrote it.
No, here's the headline. Cab driver charged with taking Dan Rather for a ride.
Hey,
you know, I've been watching. Guys, I don't know if you watch this show. I think it's on the Axios station, which I happen to get. And usually, you know, I got 500 channels on my TV. I'm lucky if I can find one thing of interest. there's about 87 Spanish stations, 32 German stations, 6 in French, 1 Creole, and I'm lucky I can find something. But Dan Rather's got a pretty good show, gentlemen, where he gets some of these classic rock guys, you know, the John Fogertys of the world, and sits down with them for an hour. ZZ Top and Ringo Starr and Neil Young, and, you know, Steve, stop me when I hit somebody that you've heard of. Steve, stop me.
Well, I'm sure that's big ratings. John Fogerty and Dan Rather kicking it.
Yeah. I'm waiting for the this could have to be a two-parter with Bette Midler, you know, so I'm waiting for that one, but that would have to be a two-parter. There's so much ground to cover. But
all right, Ira, when he sits
Steve,
down
that,
with
Steve, that's the greatest music of our lives, Steven. You can't turn your back on that stuff.
I'm not turning my back on anything, but I'll tune in if he sits down with Britney. I mean, let's just be realistic about it.
Oh, Jesus. On that note, Lee, that tells you all you need to know about our genial host.
Britney's in her late 30s now. She's fair game. And she rides on a Vegas stage every once in a while. Okay.
Iris, send us out of here on a Bucks thought.
We debated the anticipation between the 03 Bucks and the 2020 Bucks from a fan perspective. Lee chimes in that from a media perspective, it's no comparison. You say from a fan perspective, no comparison, 2003 wins. I'll tell you where 2020 wins. They better make the playoffs, gentlemen. They better make the damn playoffs, because if not, this thing could get ugly very fast. And 7 out of 16, you know, I was very good in math, people. I was very good, Matt. That's over 40%. Over 40% of NFL teams will qualify for postseason play in 2020. The Bucks better be among the 42%. Otherwise, there's going to be hell to pay, DeKemper. Hell to pay.